Yes, and kia ora and good evening, everybody. I hope you're doing well this evening and have had a good day. I've been hard out all day editing, researching, prepping, all of that good stuff. And yes, we do have Mary Byrne that we're going to bring in from Fluoride Free New Zealand and, of course, Freedom Alliance NZ. But we've been having a bit of trouble with her technically, so I'll try again in a minute to get her on board. But welcome, everybody. I hope you're doing well, because it's tough out there, I know, but let's keep our chins up, our eyes high, pointed towards heaven, and let's be kind. And I'm not talking about Jacinda Ardern kind. How about that for kind? Let's just dwell on that for a second, shall we? How kind was she really? Well, the documentary is going to reveal exactly that, because you know what? If that's kindness, well, I'd hate to see what hatred and unkindness and nastiness is, because that's the worst version of kindness I think we've ever could imagine, don't you think? I think so. Anyway, okay, right. So we've got a bit of a show for you tonight. We're going to look at climate change. We're going to look at New Zealand politics. Boy, they say, you know, a day in politics is really like a month for everyone else, and that's what we've had today for Kitty Allen. She is gone. We'll see if she'll bounce back into the beehive, but we'll see some feedback from Chris Chipkins himself and see what he has to say about it all. So we'll have a bit of a dialogue around that. We're also going to be looking at climate change tonight. Yes, aren't you sick of it? Just like COVID, we've got climate change to live with now. And these people that are driving the climate change mission are exactly the same people that have driven us into anxiety, fear, suicide, economic destruction for the last 3 and a bit years. They're the same group of people, aren't they? And now what they're wanting to do now, we've got them in New Zealand, that the Climate Change Commission under Dr. Rod Carr, they're insane. They are literally, in my book, fully insane. We're going to look at some articles about New Zealand farmers. Look, New Zealand farmers, if you think Chris Luxon is going to rescue you, you probably need to think again, because he's saying nothing about climate change. He's saying nothing about significant natural areas and all these other things that we're going to look at tonight. So I don't think we can trust any of them, can we? It doesn't look like it. Anyway, before I get too far into it, I'm just going to, I want to do some quick housekeeping. Guys, please, if you can, please email me if you would like any of my reading material, beautiful Christian books that I can send you for free as gifts from House of the Lord Ministries. Please email me here. If you like a brand new Bible, please let me know as well. Okay, I've got beautiful King James Bibles available for a very small koha, and it's yours, and I'll put the other books into a pack, send it off to you. So don't be shy. If you want to join my weekly Bible studies, please do as well. Now, family, I don't want to drive you insane with this stuff, but I really do need your help. I've got Auntie Barbara Rasmussen watching me tonight, and she can attest that we are up to our eyebrows in legal bills. And so I don't know how to really cope with it unless we have help. You get by with a little help from your friends. So if you are able to, could you please support me and help me to pay the lawyer before I get to court on Monday? That's typically how it works. So if you are able to help me, please do. And this is the account you do it. If you even want to help me just to, you know, keep the power going and things like that, that would be the way to do it, using this account. And we're very grateful for any support, that's for sure. All right, guys, I'm not going to go there. Why? Because we were just there a minute ago, so let's not go there. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to try and get Mary back on the line here. So just bear with us. Bear with me a second. We had some strange stuff go down, so we're going to try it roundabout now and see how we go.
Hi.
Hi there. Oh,
okay,
no.
Okay, hang on.
Okay, camera. we're gonna see.
Yay.
If it's going to work.
Yay.
Oh, sweet. Wow. Okay, you just need to wipe the camera lens now, dear. All right, let's try and get this going, shall we? There she is. All right, I was going to do a big warm welcome to you, but we've kind of lost that. I'm just going to move you over there a wee bit. But kia ora and welcome to Major Dicol Last Day Events News. Sister Mary Byrne from Freedom... Sorry, I'll start that again. I don't know which one to start with. Freedom Alliance New Zealand, or is it Fluoride Free New Zealand? But no, it's Fluoride Free New Zealand tonight. How's it going out there?
Good, thanks, Billy. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I'm just glad we got you on. Now, as the whānau will attest, I did talk about what you're up to last night on the show. But what we want to do, so we can get this taken care of, is I have got a flyer that is one of your flyers here. And tell us about what you're doing at the moment.
Okay, well, we're embarking on talks around the country. It's been initiated because the government has sent a directive at the moment just to 14 councils telling them that they have to start fluoridation. Some of them are meant to start next week or within about a week. Others it's, 6 months, a year, maybe 2 years. Then they've sent a letter to about another 35 councils telling them to expect a directive. So what's happening is all these people who have been living in non-fluoridated areas are now suddenly being told that they're going to have fluoridation forced upon them. So we're going to as many places around the country as we can get to. At the moment, we're mostly reaching the people that, already know there's something wrong with fluoridation, but they don't know all the details. So we're trying to help educate people, bring them up to speed with everything that's happening, be there to answer questions, advise them on what steps we think that they should make within a community, and also really encourage them to form their own group so they have their own local group and they meet regularly, and then they decide what action should be taken in their local area.
Okay, yeah. Now that sounds absolutely urgent and imperative. So we've got a date on Wednesday the 26th at 6 p.m. at The Ledge on 79 Walton Street, Whangarei. That is this Wednesday. And then on Friday the 28th of July at 7 p.m, you are going to be at the Cornerstone Whare Karakia or Manako, 144 Kirikiri Road, Kirikiri. Now, can you let us know numbers? How many people can get in there? Is there limited numbers? What's the deal there?
I'm not 100% sure. I think they've got enough seating for 100 people at the Ledge. And the Kirikiri one, I think it would be able to seat 100 quite easily. We haven't had that many people yet, apart from the debate that we had in Timaru, where we debated two dentists and we had 150 people there. But we've also got a council meeting in Dargaville on Wednesday morning, and what we're hoping is that the public in Dargaville will come along and support us giving out sort of, 5 to 10 minutes talk to the councillors, because it really matters that the public are going to the council meetings and expressing to the councillors that they don't want fluoridation. So it really counts.
All right then, I'm going to send it all out through my network. I'm going to put it on Telegram. So to everybody watching this, please share this this bit of news tonight. If you're living in Northland, if you're in Kirikiri, if you're in Whangarei or Dargaville, please support this. This is so important because they're doing a lot of things at once. We've got the therapeutics bill. We've got this. We've got all sorts of sneaky things that are going on at the moment that we're going to look at tonight. All right, then I will cover this again before we say goodnight tonight. All right, now I've got a couple of articles that I do want to share. One of them is this. This is, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. This is in regards to a protest that happened at an anti-co-governance meeting in Palmerston North. Now, everybody should be involved with this, and especially the Māori community, people go, how can you say that, Billy? Well, it's because the code governance issue, it's a scam. It's a scam. It's not co-governance. Well, not with Māori. It'll be co-governance with the United Nations. That's where it's going. And we need to be involved with this. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this article, because the thing that makes me laugh about all of these types of articles like this, they're having a go at a lady going to a meeting. This is a private meeting. This is an anti-co-governance meeting. And this woman gate crashes, and she's acting like a nut job, and she gets put, she gets shoved out, dragged out. Okay, a little bit rough than what I would imagine, but it was no Posey Parker. Was no Posey Parker event. Now, this is it here. This is what happened. Let's have a look. Look at this. Hate speech. All right, so that's the stupidity going on there. But what grabs my attention, it says that protester injured after getting dragged out of anti-co-governance meeting in Palmerston North. Now, the original heading for this was actually disgusting, terrible, all of that stuff. But you know what's so funny, Mary? They're saying that a woman getting ushered out like that is disgusting, it's horrible, and all that, right? And yet this very same media were happy to celebrate Posey Parker getting attacked, getting threatened with probably death, with getting, you know, tomato soup or whatever it was chucked on her, being terrified beyond beyond reasonable measure. And we've got this, and the media picks up on that and says, oh, what a terrible thing. So are we talking about ideology that the media agrees with? If you protest on that basis, on what they agree with, they'll support you. And if you get a hard time, that's disgusting. But if you actually happen to protest about something common sense, rational, like, you know, women's rights, like women not having men with penises go into their changing rooms and join their rugby teams and swimming teams and things like that, and then they'll give you a hard time for not only protesting about those issues, if someone wants to kill you or beat you up, they'll celebrate it. Is this hypocrisy that we're seeing, Mary?
Oh, total hypocrisy. I mean, they're just so into their own agenda, and they it's like they've got no self-awareness about how biased they are, and they just don't care that they're biased anymore. They just don't care. They just think they have the right to propagate whatever they happen to believe. And yeah, the fact that they can't see that Posey Parker could have been blooming killed in that event in Auckland. She really could have been killed.
Yep.
And they didn't call that violence. I mean, it just shows you how corrupt they are, really.
Absolutely.
Corrupt.
They actually celebrated it, didn't they? They actually celebrated that Posey Parker, aka Minshaw, she gets virtually her life threatened, and a woman gets an elderly woman gets her jaw broken by a guy who gets a slap on the wrist and a bit of home detention for breaking an elderly woman's jaw. I can't believe that, really. And they, yeah, you know, they celebrate all of that, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it just shows you who the violent ones are, because, you know, Posey Parker dares to stand up and give her opinion on something, and look what happened to her, and, you know, and the people around her being beaten up. And then this woman can go into that space. She's not beaten up. She didn't have the whole room turn against her and try to beat her up and throw things on her and all the rest of it. All they did was remove her.
Yep.
That's all they did.
So we got to ask ourselves, how was the media weaponized in New Zealand? Well, I'd like to suggest that it's because of that. The Public Interest Journalism Fund closes. And, oh, heck, what am I doing here? Hold on. Ooh, that was lucky. I just about did something I didn't want to do then. But anyway, so I reckon all, how that happened, and I'm just going to share my screen so you can see what I'm talking about, Mary. I didn't realise I hadn't done that. So we've got the Public Interest Journalism Fund here, and they now say it closes on the 23rd of July. Now, that's interesting, because when I spoke to New Zealand On Air, they said it had closed months and months ago. So that was really strange, because I rung up to ask them if they would give me a grant to fund my documentary about the government's response to COVID-19. And that was the day that I met you at the Beehive, and we had our dealings with, of course, parliamentary security, wanting to know what we're doing and all that good stuff. Anyway, but it's because of this thing here. A $55 million contestable fund for New Zealand journalism has now closed. Interesting. The woman I spoke to lied. The fund was created to support media through the COVID-19 downturn, which saw some titles close at the outset of the pandemic. Now, I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe that they were given $55 million just to help them through a tough time. According to NZ On Air, it provided 7 rounds of funding for 73 projects, 219 roles, 22 industry development projects. All right, listen to this. Funding received by staff over several years included up to $249,000 and $103,000 for 2 Marlborough reporters and a Te Reo Māori translator, up to $371,000 and $324,000 to investigative team staff circuit for documentaries, digital and print features. Listen to this. Up to $2.7 million for 20 community and pro-tiaki reporting roles, up to $731,000 over 2 years, retained roles in Marlborough, and up to almost $600,000 for the Whole Truth, a fact-checking project. Did Stuff.com get bought out by the New Zealand government, Mary? This is heinous. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's wicked. But you know what? That's not all the money that they've received. They've received more money than that. And there's advertising. Don't forget the advertising, that 24-hour message of COVID-19 death fear. Go get your jab. Do it for the team of 5 million. Go and lock yourselves away and become nervous wrecks and lonely. And go and hang yourself because you've lost hope and had your heart broken because you can't see your loved ones when you're an elderly person. Because that's what was going on. This documentary that we're doing is going to cover all of that. And these so-called human beings, Mary, this is the thing that really, really, truly upsets me, is that they never once adequately covered the idea that people were getting harmed, or just using the government's information, they weren't reporting the adverse events that the government was reporting in their own CALM report, Centre for Adverse Events Reporting System at medsafe.govt. They not only not reported the information, they slandered people talking about the information, Mary. Yeah. And, you know, why do you think that is?
Well, so they can get their own way, I suppose. You know, because if they'd have told the truth, well, half of New Zealand would never have taken the jab, maybe more than half. So hardly anybody would get it if they actually knew the truth about it.
Yes.
And, I mean, even what we knew right at the beginning, before they even started the jabs, it was already reported that it didn't stop transmission. And yet they just lied. They just lied to the whole country.
Yep. And they're still saying the lie. They are still telling the message. This is the thing I can't get over. And, you know, I did a segment last night on the newest project by Radio New Zealand, of course, state-owned Radio New Zealand. They've got a new one called Undercurrent. And it's about freaky. Okay, what is it about? It's them saying that misinformation and disinformation has has basically taken over a large section of New Zealand, which it has. They'll try and minimise it, but it's massive. There, so many more people are awake now. It is happening. And they're trying to make out now that everyone who's in that camp on that side of the fence line is potentially a domestic terrorist, is potentially a nut job, can't think for themselves, have been sucked in and pulled along. Now, I'm calling it the straw man argument, the straw man paradigm, where it doesn't matter what the concerns are that we have, it only matters that we don't agree with them and then their self-appointed importance. That's all that matters to them. But one of the things that did sadden me is Kate Hannah's fear. She says she's all about fear. I'm scared. I'm not scared about the people the police know. I'm scared about the people that the police don't know. And I don't know how to live in a world like this. She's literally insane, Mary. What are your thoughts about Kate Hannah saying something like that?
I think she's paranoid. I think she's absolutely and utterly paranoid. And maybe what she should do is just sit down and talk with some of us. Maybe that's what she should do. Because it's not us, none of us are advocating violence. In fact, we're always advocating the opposite.
Absolutely. Peace is what we, you know, this is the strange thing. This is the great irony of the whole conversation with them, is that they say that, you know, that they feel threatened, they feel at risk, they feel, you know, intimidated, all of these things. And yet the strange irony is it's not us turning up at protests and being violent and beating old woman up. It's no one like that at all. It's their people that do that. It's their people that turned up at the protest in Wellington and wanted to cause a great hurrah, which they ended up doing. It wasn't, you know, you were there, Mary. It wasn't the protesters that had been there for the weeks leading up to that. Suddenly there's all these people turned up on that day ready for a scrap. Where did they come from?
Well, I think that was the police that suddenly turned up wanting a scrap. You know, and it was the police that had been harassing people, you know, night after night, coming in at all hours of the morning. And, you know, and then there was Trevor Mallard doing the psychological torture on everybody. But, you know, that last day, you know, what they'd done with that protest is over those 3 weeks, they'd turned the public against us by lying, you know, by lying about what was going on at the protest when that just wasn't the case. And then when the police came down, they were wrecking everything. They were, you know, they pulled off all the tents, they threw people's equipment all over the place, they stormed into a tent where there happened to be kids were still actually there. But that the last incident with the fire, you know, those people, you know, it seems to all of us they must have been agent provocateurs, especially because the police stood on that pathway waiting. And I was actually at that spot when it happened because I was trying to move some of the stuff, the boxes from the children's tent out, because everyone was scrambling by that stage to get their stuff out. You know, people had piles of things in there, so everyone was running up and down the hill trying to get all of their gear off Parliament grounds. So, and I was one of those people, and I'd come back up, and the police were still just standing there at that path, waiting, it seemed. Yep. And then the fire happened out of nowhere, and the police didn't do anything about it. And then some other people started throwing all sorts on the fire when, you know, 5 minutes ago, people were trying to get their gas cylinders off Parliament. But then I think after a little while of that, I do think there were our protesters that did fight back. And I think that was because people were so angry. They were so angry at what the police had done. I mean, I have to admit, I felt like throwing something back at the police. I didn't do that, but it's a bit different for a woman of my age to be able to control my temper and not throw something than if you're a 20-year-old male who's been there for 23 nights being harassed by the police, and seeing what the police did. I mean, I just think, no wonder some people threw some stuff back at the police. The police were wrecking everything, and they'd beaten people up all day.
Okay. So here's this clip from Kate Henner. It's not the people that the police know about, the people I worry about. It's the people that the police don't know about. And it will be a situation. Listen to this. This is where it gets weirder. And it will be a situation quite similar to the Christchurch terrorist, where it will be somebody who has been on the periphery for quite some time and who is preparing and waiting and will find the moment. And this is Susie Ferguson, the producer of this series. She says, that's terrifying. So who's planting the concept that this is happening? Who's actually visualizing that's going to happen? Who's actually sowing the seed of fear here? Because that's what they're good at. Now, and then she says this, oh, no, I don't really know how to deal with living in this world, that this is the world that we live in. I mean, she's desperate, isn't she?
Well, in that case.
She really is. I've been re I'm researching her at the moment, and for episode three, and she's almost every clip I've looked of hers, she looks like a nut job. I'm sorry, she really, really does. She really, truly looks like a nut job. Now, one of the other thing about the media that I just want to point out there is that we are consistently bombarded with the rainbow agenda. Every time you put stuff on or News Hub, whatever, you're going to see articles like this. There's two in one here. This is just a couple of days ago. I mean, hey, look, if they want to do their thing, knock yourself out. Far be it for me to judge, God is going to judge them. Now, but do we really need to know the ins and outs about a gay all black with a small man that he's getting married to, apparently, and these two dearies up the top there that are flight attendants? Why is it that we get slammed like that? I mean, quite frankly, I'm not really interested in heterosexual couples in that way. I don't really want to know how they met. I'm not that interested. I'm re I'm what I'm really interested in is what this government is up to, and how the, and the sexualization of our babies, the ruining of our economy, and civil rights and liberties. And of course, my work as a pastor. But do we really want to be always confronted with this every day?
No, well, I don't read stuff hardly ever. I only ever tend to read it when someone sent me a link, to tell me that there's been something interesting, which is occasionally. But or like this morning with Kerry Allen, that was interesting. But
Yes, it's a big one.
I don't watch. We don't watch TV. We haven't watched it for years. We don't read mainstream stuff anymore because it's pathetic.
It is.
And as you say, I'm not interested in heterosexual couples either. Like, I've never really read those Women's Weekly and all that sort of stuff. That's never been my cup of tea to start with. I'm just not interested in just sort of those dramas or something.
No, that's right. Let people get on with their lives, I say. All right, let's look at Kitty Allen. This is one out of the boy, out of the box. Let's have a look at this. Look at that. Look at that look of horror. This is, by the way, this is what Stuff have put up. Look at him. He's like, oh my word. He's like, oh my gosh, how the heck am I gonna deal with this today? That's what the caption should say. Or, oh my gosh, and I just had morning tea. Or another cap. You want to think of a caption title for that photo, Mary? Maybe. Oh no, I think I need to go to the bathroom. What about something? What about
Yeah,
something?
I mean, he should have sacked her. He should have sacked her a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, how she's been able to have this mental health few weeks. How many other people could just take a few weeks off work paid for because they're going for a relationship problem? I don't think there's many New Zealanders that actually can do that. Whereas she was allowed to just be off on paid leave. But I think there was enough warning bells back then that he should have sacked her and he didn't. So it wasn't just completely out of the blue that he had some MP having a few drinks and then crashing a car. You know, this was leading up to something like that. So that's on him as well.
Yeah.
He didn't deal with that properly. But, I mean, it's so funny, isn't it? It's so ironic. The Minister of Justice.
I know. And there's more to it. Anyway, let's have a listen to what he has to say here. And by the way, I just want to be perfectly clear. I don't wish Kitty Allen any harm and certainly don't wish her any ill will. We are looking at this because it's a shocking thing that the Minister of Justice has been involved in something like this. So that's why we're looking at it, by the way. All right. So I do want to send, well wishes to her, but we still got to deal with the issue here, and it's not a good issue, and that is a Minister of Justice has done this. Let's have a look.
Good morning. Shortly after 9 o'clock last night, Kitty Allen was involved in a car crash on Evans Bay Parade in Wellington. She was taken into custody and held at the Wellington Central Police Station. She was released at around 1 a.m. this morning. She's been charged with careless use of a motor vehicle and refusing to accompany a police officer, and summons to appear in court at a later date. You'll note that the charges have now been confirmed by the police. They differ to those contained in my statement this morning. The information in my statement this morning was what was provided to my office by Kitty. An infringement notice has also been issued for excess breath alcohol between 250 and 400 micrograms. The police commissioner advised the police minister that Kitty Allen had been taken into custody around 10 p.m. I was advised shortly thereafter. While her actions are inexcusable, I was given information that she was experiencing extreme emotional distress at the time of the incident. My initial concerns last night were for her immediate safety and well-being. It appears that some of her personal struggles came to a head yesterday and were contributing factors in this incident. I spoke to Kitty the first thing this morning, just before 7 a.m. I advised her that I did not believe that she was in a fit state to hold a ministerial warrant. She expressed remorse and had already sent me a message just before that, indicating that she intended to resign. She understood that retaining her ministerial warrant was untenable, especially for a justice minister to be charged with criminal offending. Kitty is now heading home and will be taking time to consider her future in politics. I recently provided Kitty with the opportunity to address her mental health issues. After taking some time out, she told me she was ready to return to work. Those who saw her last week in the House and here in the Theatreette launching the Ram Raid policy would have observed her at the top of her game.
All right, observed her at the top of her game. Now, I just want to kind of fast forward this to question and answer. And there's his look of horror as he's dealing with it. So it just gets worse for him. Let's have a look.
And as she indicated last week through her actions, I didn't really have any basis to question that.
Mr. How is Kitty doing and what supports have been put around her?
I spoke to her on the phone this morning. It would be fair to say it was a difficult conversation. She's clearly not in a good space. So it was not a long conversation. We have people with her and around her at the moment supporting her.
Is that the reason that the court date has been set for a later date, the emotional distress?
That's ultimately a question for the police.
And now you've, in a succession of weeks, you've lost a number of ministers. Does your government retain the confidence of the public? Is it time for a snap election?
There will be an election on the 14th of October. That has not been, front of mind for me in the last few hours.
The confidence of the public?
They elected us.
Look at that. Do you have the confidence of the public? they elected us. Well, okay. So, Mary, what do you make of it? Oh, no, you go first and then I'll unpack it.
Well, in my view, I think that why is she getting such a soft ride from him, really? Because if that was anybody else in the general public, you know, we wouldn't all be talking about wrapping support around her, et cetera, et cetera. If it's somebody else in the public, they have to deal with the consequences. Yet he's putting out a big sympathy vote for her. It must be really difficult for him because he's losing MPs left, right, and centre, and he doesn't have enough people to replace them. So I see that he's appointed Ginny Anderson to be the Minister of Justice, as well as she's already the Minister of Police. So he mustn't trust anybody else. So they don't have a big pool of people to call on. But I don't know. I kind of think it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious, the Minister of Justice doing that and her running away from the car and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Billy, I don't really have much sympathy for those people. You know,
look, I've got to say, I don't either. You know, in some sense, this is my view of it. To me, it looks like how bad can it get yet for Labour? They've had all of these things go wrong for them. I mean, like, since basically Jacinda realised that she was on the downward slope into the dirty swamp, she gets out, abandons ship, and Hipkins gets given the golden ticket to the Wonka factory, and he takes over. And it's just been one thing after another. It almost feels a little bit to me like, you know, do they all know something that we don't know? Do they all know that at the senior level in Labour caucus that it's over? They've done their job. They've had 6 years of free chauffeur, free flights, per diems, six-figure salary, media time, treated like royalty as an MP, and now it's over. You know, now it's over. And I tell you what, the scary thing is, what is next? It's not scary. I'm just using that as a throwaway rhetorical term. But what is next? Well, it's going to be Chris Luxon. What are we likely to get from him? What are we likely to get from him? I think we're going to get a hell of a lot worse, to be honest. I think we've suffered greatly in these past 6 years. But when I looked into the eyes of Chris Luxon the other week when I was speaking to him, he's not a nice person. I don't say that about many people. I really don't like saying things like that, but he's promoted himself pretty much as a Christian member of parliament. Well, I just don't believe it, because he doesn't feel like that. When I asked him, you know, are you trustworthy, and he goes, well, I think I am. And I said, and then as we disengaged, I said, well, all that people want is for people to actually serve them in Parliament. Will you serve the people? And that was it. That was the end of the conversation. So this implosion that Labour is going through, to me, in my way of thinking, it just, like the Red Sea being parted, it actually paves and clears the way for all of the guys in National to jump onto their white horses, onto their white steeds, and gallop up Parliament steps and into the beehive and say, we're going to save our economy, we're going to fix everything up, but we're not going to get rid of climate change, we're not going to get rid of emissions trading scheme, we're not going to get rid of significant natural areas, we're not going to do this, we're still going to do civil liberties erosion.
Fluoridation,
vaccines. You know, don't forget, this is the Chris Luxon is the MP that said, in 2019, he said it himself, if you don't get your jab, you shouldn't get your welfare benefit. Mm. So where is he going to take us? Because it's not going backwards. The powers that be behind the international health regulations and the WHO, they're pushing forward. Why are they doing that? Because everything else is connected to it. The 15-minute cities, the UN Agenda 2030, it's all a part of it. Climate change, it's all connected. Now, speaking of freedom fighters, we had lawyer Sue Gray to appear before a tribunal. Police keep watchful eye on crowds. So have you heard anything about this today, Mary? Have you heard anything? What's the latest there?
No, I don't know the latest. I only know that she went to court, but I don't know any outcomes.
Right. It's been pretty, I've got to say, it has been pretty, it's been pretty quiet. But here is the latest for you. It says this. Let's just change that. It says that the tribunal reserves its decision in matter regarding Sue Gray's future as a lawyer. Let's read it a wee bit. Well-known lawyer Sue Gray has told a tribunal she wears many hats and not everything she says should be taken in her capacity as a lawyer. That's fair enough. Gray, known for her campaign against the COVID-19 vaccination rollout and mask mandate, faced charges of bringing the profession into disrepute. She faced charges of bringing the profession into disrepute at the Lawyers and Conveyances Disciplinary Tribunal on Monday. The hearing could determine her future in the law profession. And it just goes on about, unidentified people. And we did identify one of them, a nut job lefty in Nelson who made the complaint. So when they say people, it's looking like it was one guy making several complaints. Now, I'm not a big Sue Gray fan, but where I will support her is her right to have her view and have a voice separate to being a lawyer. And there's no way that they should be persecuting her for having a view that's different to the narrative. And this is the great elephant in the room, though, Mary, is that basically almost everything that Sue has said is factually backed up. The jabs weren't safe. They weren't effective. They didn't stop you from getting sick. They didn't stop you from being infectious. And they weren't blinking safe. They should never have been mandated. So I don't even have to think about what she says, because she says some of the same things that I do. So what's your view from that perspective?
Yeah, well, it's sort of persecution, isn't it? So if people speak out against the government, then now they're trying to bring in that you can't even be a lawyer. You can't be a lawyer, you can't be a doctor, you can't be anything if you don't toe the party line. So it's just basically communism.
It is.
That's where we're getting to, that, you know, you just have to do and say what the government says.
Yep.
It's so far down. It's horrible. It really, really is horrible. So, of course, she should be allowed her opinion on anything.
Well, we all should. We all should be allowed to have an opinion, even if we don't like it or agree with it. All right. Now, before we go into our last topic, I wanted to look at this. This is a really cute picture. Look at these two. I'll bring it up a bit. Look at these two. Now, that's like I've got a big giant dog and a little white kitten, and they do this as well. They're besties. I can't believe it. I had a little white kitten and a big gigantic dog eating from the same bowl the other day. But anyway, that's not what the point is of this. This is, unfortunately, a story about family violence in New Zealand. Now, I was a white ribbon ambassador for 8 years until the Labour Party took it off me for speaking up against them. Surge in demand, forced pet refuge for family violence victims to create wait list. Family violence in New Zealand, Mary, is so bad now that people are needing to escape family violence homes. They've got pets they can't take with them. And the emergency housing for pets is now in great distress. They can't fit them all in. Good grief. What's going on with our country, Mary? It's just too much, isn't it?
It is. It is. I mean, it's just everything's been going wrong for so long. Just been completely going down the wrong track for so long.
Yeah, it's wicked. Now, what I do, I'm sorry, I haven't got much better news for you here. Now, the media are so foolish, as we know. But look at this. Why we should be backing New Zealand farmers like we do the All Blacks, right? I'm just going to read a couple of titles. So industrialized farming, right? So it talks about why we need to back them, blah-de-blah-de-blah, right? That's one article here. Then you go into another one, and what have we got here? We've got farmers being attacked in the Hawke's Bay because they now have the threat of GMO crops all around them that's going to contaminate their heirloom natural seeds. That's what they're doing. That's what they've done in America. And who was a big part of making that happen in America like that? Monsanto. Who is a big investor in Monsanto today?
Old Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. You can't escape him. So these farmers that they're saying they need to back, well, they've got it pretty bad. They've got it pretty blinking bad. Because what are they going to do when they've got someone who, some foolish farmer down the road from them, who puts up a crop of, shall we say, corn that has GMO insect parts in it and, you know, something else in it, some weird Frankenstein seed that they use, and then a strong wind blows up and it goes down the road, contaminates the natural crop. Next minute, someone from Monsanto turns up and picks one leaf or one ear of corn, tests it, and hey presto, that crop down the road has now got their patented product in their crop when they didn't want it, and now they're breaching patent laws, which under the CTPPA is a punishable offence.
Yeah, that's what happened to that Canadian farmer, wasn't it? Percy someone. And he never was able to get out of that. I think he took it as far as the Supreme Court, and they still found him guilty.
It's wicked.
It's just incredible.
Well, guess what? It gets worse for the farmers. Supermarkets have now put farmers on notice. They have to provide farm-specific emissions data. Can you believe that? And that's why farmers are committing suicide at a rate never seen before, and they've always been one of the highest sectors of suicide. And these stupid people are now playing the game of tyranny. Mm. This is fascism. This is the fascist part.
Totally is. I know a pig farmer in the Wairarapa, and I think they actually went out of business because of the rules around pig farming. And he said, they were trying to treat the animals as well as possible. And he did think there was room for improvement as they could. But he said the restrictions by the government, or the regulations by the government, made it impossible for them to continue, at least, you know, at the time that the government wanted them to. So now they don't produce, they're not a pig farm, but we are now importing all the bacon from overseas. So he says where the pigs are treated worse than what they had been in New Zealand.
Absolutely. So this is what this says. Supermarkets are looking at how they can reduce emissions from farms that supply them with meat, milk and fresh produce. Countdown Head of Sustainability, Catherine Langerbeer, said as part of its wider sustainability plan, Countdown committed to reduce supply emissions by 19%. So they're making decisions. The big fascist, big authority is making decisions on the little businessmen, on their business. And she says, the emissions profile of our products and their production and transportation is critical to tackle because it represents the vast majority of our overall carbon footprint. Well, you know what they should, Mary? They should all go, right, supply them nothing. All of the farmers just go, no, we're not going along with it. This climate change emission scheme nonsense is rubbish. It's going to cripple us. We're going to end up starving in New Zealand. We're going to end up crippling our economy, which is agriculture, horticulture, massive contributors to GDP. And these fools that want to meet their sustainability goals are going to end up killing people. And a lot of these poor farmers are going to fall victim to it. I'm sorry, I feel very passionate about this because where I live, I'm surrounded by people who are farmers, and they value very, very much their ability to be farmers, and any more costs will absolutely annihilate them.
Yeah, so Groundswell are calling for a boycott of Countdown, aren't they?
I don't know, but we should be. I'm happy to hear that.
They're calling for a boycott of Countdown. But I was in a little town somewhere recently, and the only supermarket they had was Countdown. So,
well, they need, yeah.
But anyway, if you have a choice, don't go to Countdown.
Absolutely. All right, here's one of two articles to finish on, both related to climate change. This is Senator Ron Johnson. I like this man. Have a look at this. This is the climate change meeting where he famously asks the climate change panel how much carbon actually goes into the atmosphere. None of them knew. And he said it was like 0.2%. But anyway, this is another part of that same interview. It goes like this.
Ranking member here, please, Senator Grassley, on Monday. So I need to first state that the opinions I express are those of my own, not Senator Grassley. I don't want to get him in trouble. Also, I want to say I'm not a climate change denier. I'm just not a climate change alarmist. But I find the debate fascinating. I look forward to the hearing. Read a fair amount about it, a couple good books, Climate Change, the Facts, edited by Alan Moran. Apocalypse Never is a more recent one by subtitle there, Why Environmental Alarmism Hurts Us All by Michael Schellenberger. And then anything that Bjorn Lomborg writes. And by the way, I think I'm saying this right, that Mr. Lomborg completely acknowledges man-made climate change, just doesn't think we should spend anything with limited resources. There's far better ways of spending money to alleviate human suffering. And I'm glad to see that Mr. Lewis is citing Mr. Lomborg in his testimony a number of times. But in my mind, a good scientist is a very healthy skeptic. You know, always questioning, always seeking the truth. And to me, the term scientific consensus, I know there certainly is some, but it's a very unscientific term in many ways, you know, particularly when you're dealing with something that, I think there's a lot of legitimate disagreement in terms of climate change. But, you know, but why am I skeptical? I'm 67 years old. I've lived through decades of Malthusianism, doomsayers. And I just asked my staff to get just a couple of the most delicious predictions. Not only were these individuals wrong, they were spectacularly wrong. In 1970, Harvard biologist George Wald estimated that, quote, civilization will end within 15 or 30 years, by 1985 to 2000, unless immediate action is taken against problems facing mankind. January 1970, Life magazine said scientists had solid evidence to support the prediction that by 1980, urban dwellers would have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. In the spring of 1970, issue of The Living Wilderness, Dennis Hayes, the chief organizer for Earth Day, declared that, quote, it is already too late to avoid mass starvation. 1978, the New York Times reported that a team of climate specialists saw, quote, no end in sight to a 30-year cooling trend in the Northern Hemisphere. 1980, ecologist Kenneth Watt predicted the world would be 4 degrees colder in 1990 and 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. That, by the way, didn't happen. 1988, Maldives Director of Environmental Affairs predicted the rising sea levels threatened to cover the islands in the next 30 years. 1989, Noel Brown, a UN environmental official, said entire nations would be wiped off the earth if sea levels from global warming were not reversed by the year 2000. 2004, Pentagon climate change report said Britain will be Siberia by the year 2020. Don't think that happened. 2007, head of the UN climate panel claimed that it would be, quote, too late unless drastic action were taken by the year 2012. And in 2008, Al Gore, by the way, anybody know how much his wealth has grown off of climate alarmism? But he cited a claim from another climate researcher that the North Pole may be ice-free by the year 2013. That didn't happen either.
All right, so you get the picture here. So we've got this whole climate thing going on, but it gets worse, Mary. I want to share an article from yesterday's stuff.com. And this is why people are committing suicide. Sorry, this is today's. Time to give up on the false hope and prepare for the worst from climate change. This is why people are losing hope. This is why this man called Guru Nathan, former mayor of Kapiti, is putting out this crap. It's absolute rubbish. Pardon my language. I've just had enough of this stuff, Mary. It's just, this is why people are killing themselves. Kids are killing themselves because of this stuff here. They think they've got nothing to live for, and that's just so wrong. You know, he made a controversial argument. While we have a clear duty to reduce our carbon emissions, New Zealand accounts for less than 0.2%. That's exactly right, which means whatever our efforts in the mitigation space, we will not move the dial in any meaningful way. Now, who said that? That's David Cull. Right, he's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Because what's happening is that they are proposing that everybody eats insects or Bill Gates' lab-grown fake meat. And they'll bring in these measures that will cause the farmers to commit suicide and lose their businesses. You know, this is just absolutely unbelievably irresponsible. That's the former mayor of Kapiti. He's Sri Lankan. Maybe he should go back to Sri Lanka and work on climate change there, because it's that ideology that all I can see is, Mary, are hundreds of farmers committing suicide, and let alone the flow-on effects. What are your thoughts? I'm angry. Pardon me.
Well, I mean, it's all so bad, but I suppose, you know, what we've got to think is that there are a lot of us, there are a lot of people starting to wake up, and we have to push back. You know, that we have no other option other than to push back. So, you know, we can't let it continue down these tracks that they're trying to take things. And we have to keep talking to other people, spreading the real truth about what is going on, and engaging in the conversations, because, you know, it's just another one of those things that once you start looking beyond the stuff headlines, you know, we find out that it's just complete rubbish. It's complete a complete fabrication for a particular agenda. So, you know, I think being in this situation, we can either, you know, do nothing and despair and whatever, but we can't do that. We have to fight back. And it feels a lot better to fight back than to do nothing. You know, it buoys us up. And there's so many more of us. So, you know, we all have to realise that we're all responsible for our freedom. So all of us have to be taking part in that.
Beautifully said. All right, last article to say, take a look at this, folks. What we just looked at just then was infuriating and bad news. Well, I'm sorry, it doesn't get any better. Let's have a look at this one here. Sorry, guys.
Good evening. News Hub can reveal that the government is seeking to extend COVID restriction powers for another 2 years. It comes as New Zealand appears to be riding another COVID wave with daily case numbers on the rise. Here's how it's tracked since February this year when Omicron took hold with the peaks and the recent trough, but it started to trend upwards again this month. Political editor Jenna Lynch joins us now. And Jenna, what have you been told about this possible extension to the government's COVID powers?
Yeah, I've just been leaked documentation, a proposal from the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, which seeks to extend the powers for another 2 years. It wants the expiry date of the Act, which underpins all of these COVID restrictions, shifted from May 2023, its due expiry date next year, through to May 2025. And it says that this will ensure that the powers required to respond to COVID-19, including new variants, remain available available to the government. Now, this comes as most countries are winding back their pandemic responses. Australia has just gotten rid of its isolation periods, and you can assume that business will be absolutely fuming about it. We asked the Prime Minister today when restrictions are likely to end. She said she doesn't like to make guesses with COVID-19. She doesn't like to predict COVID-19's behaviour, but she did reiterate that those harsher measures, like lockdowns, remain off the table.
Political editor Jenna Lynch, live from Parliament. Tēnā koe.
All right. Tēnā koe. Mike. All right. So there you go. That's a nine-month-old article. They said in March 2020 that as soon as it was clear that we were not dealing with a major death extinction level event in New Zealand, they would hand the authority back. Don't forget at the time, 80,000 deaths a year, Sean Hendy, unless we agreed to lockdowns, which we did based on the 80,000 number. And everyone went, golly, okay, bring in the law that you need to do it. We're happy with that, just as long as we, you know, we don't all die. And so everyone went with the program. Mary, 3 years later, we've had just on 3,000 deaths in 3.5 years of people that have died with COVID, and not always from COVID. I've heard figures as much as 60% is not dying from COVID, but rather with COVID, and they're not letting this power go. What do you make of it, Mary? It's unreal.
Yeah, well, they don't want to let go of the power, do they? It's sort of the usual, isn't it, for governments. Once you hand over that power, they don't give it back. You know, and politicians can't be trusted. They like that power. So, and I think people are just getting complacent. They're used to having that law there, and they're just getting on with their lives, you know. You know, some people still believing in the whole COVID thing.
Well, so. I tell you what, this is the thing. We cannot let them get us down in that way. And, you know, just like you were saying before, what's, you know, we've got to think about mitigation. As I continually say to everybody, get out of the cities. Get out of the cities. Get your gardens growing under glass houses and plastic hoops, because you can't grow the same outdoors anymore. They've done something. We know it. They have. I've been speaking to growers all over New Zealand who are now experiencing unusual crop performance. You've got that. You've got to get, if you can, get yourselves out of the cities into the country. Buy land that is self-sufficient. Buy land as much as possible. Good soil as much as possible. Water. Wood to burn. All those things. And if you can, get your kids, well, make sure you can. Get your kids out of the schools. Go on the dole. Use their money for a while you can. We don't do it because we don't believe in it. But for us, with our faith, and we don't, you know, we don't want to be obliged to the system in that way. But, you know, for if that doesn't bother you, then use it. You know, Vinny was telling me the other day, he said to me, Billy, why aren't you on the dole, bro? I said, well, I don't want to go on the dole, you know, blah, blah, blah. I had to go on the dole just a few years, 10 years ago. Why? Because I didn't get paid by a company I worked with for 18 months. So I had to do that. I know what it's like to eat humble pie. So I'm not having to go. Anyone that's on the dole, please understand that. But he said to me, why aren't you? Use their money to fund your war campaign. So he was kind of right. But this is kind of like, you know, this is kind of like next level stuff, really. You know, where they're planning to, you know, take all the survivable elements that we need off us, so that essentially we become dependent on them. I mean, what was COVID-19 about really anyway? It was really about training us to take on a universal basic income. When I look at the economics behind the whole issue of COVID-19 in 2020, it was to prep all of us in our minds to take a universal basic income on. Why? Because things that they're going to try and plunge things that low, we're all going to go that way. And if they can do that, What does that mean? Well, we're going to need to take the central bank digital wallet. Why? Because they're going to put everything into the digital world and all the other things, vaccine passports, all that. So the best thing we can do is to disconnect from the system, find God, seek the Lord while he can be found now, because it's now is the time to do it. Because they're not backing away, are they, Mary? They're doubling down, aren't they? Fluoride, vaccination, everything.
Yeah, they are doubling down. But we have to double down, you know, back in response. So, you know, going back to the fluoride issue, right now we have an opportunity for the public to really get active and push back on the councils and demand that they resist this dictate from the government. So they can actually do that, because what it is in the legislation, the government have said that if the council does not do what they have told, they'll get a $200,000 fine and $10,000 every day after that. So that's $3.7 million a year. Now, most councillors are too scared about that, that they're all sort of saying, oh, they would end up caving. But there's been a statement of claim lodged in the High Court in Wellington against the Director General of Health. And what that means is the councils can now seek an interim injunction. They can go to the courts and say, we don't want to put fluoridation in the water till we know the outcome of this case. And that case might take years, because last time it took 5 years to go all the way through the courts, you know. And who knows, maybe they'll win. I mean, I know that, you know, we can be cynical and they'll just change the law, which, I mean, that they have done on a number of occasions and everything. And then also really the key is, though, it's public awareness. It's really the key is the people. And if we have enough of the people knowing the truth, it gets really difficult. I'll tell you a funny story, actually, Billy, just quickly. You know, in Wellington, just a couple of years ago, I think it was last year it came out, that they didn't have fluoridation in the water for the last couple of years. Do you remember hearing that story?
I think I did, actually. I think you may have told me.
Yeah, and the media were going mad about Wellington Water. That's the company that's meant to be administering it for the councils. And they were castigating them all and saying how terrible and how inefficient they were and inept and all the rest of it, that the fluoridation equipment had broken down and nobody at Wellington Water had bothered fixing it, right? Now, it turned out that somebody I know met up with a neighbour who started telling them a story that his wife worked at Wellington Water, and his wife was a bit of a hero, because she blew the whistle on what she was saying was the old boys network that knew that the fluoridation equipment had broken down, but they wouldn't do anything about it. So there was a whole lot of people, obviously, within Wellington Water that don't want fluoridation. So they were all just shuffling it around and, you know, nobody taking responsibility for it. So it shows that if you get enough of the public not wanting to do things, it does get really hard for the government to make it happen, because people don't, you know, they don't pull out stops to go and get something like that fixed. So I'm really hoping that people will come to the talks and learn more about fluoridation. And say, you know, for instance, just learning that the fluoridation chemicals are honestly toxic waste from the phosphate fertilizer industry, scrubbed from their chimneys, too toxic to go into the air, sea, lakes, rivers, you know. But if they put it in a tanker, drive it to the council, drip feed it through our public water supply, that's how they dispose of it. And, you know, the 1% that gets drunk by us, 50% gets stored in our bones and soft tissue for no good reason, you know, it's a poison. So that is so outrageous that if we had a really good percentage, that maybe not a majority, but a good percentage of New Zealanders just understanding that one fact, I think we could bring down fluoridation.
Absolutely.
Just understanding that they're putting toxic waste in the drinking water.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm with you 100% to support you and getting that message out. All right, whānau, that is us. We've gone over time a bit. I've kept Mary way past her bedtime. Now, again, if you'd like to support me with keeping the show going as well as my legal fees for next Monday, please use this account. Please support me to continue on the work that I do to stay out of prison, to fight the charges that I am. I can't believe I'm saying that, but that shows you what we're dealing with in New Zealand. So please keep me in your prayers, and if you are able to support me, this is the way to do it here. All right, thank you, Sister Mary, for being with me tonight to have a look at these issues. And just hold on 1 second as I do my closing address. Please take care. We'll be right back.
Okay, thanks, Billy.
All right, whānau, that's me. With all the stuff that we look at, and I say this night after night, please keep the peace in your spirit. This is for educational purposes that we talk about this. My recipe for dealing with this is to keep a calm heart, to turn to God, turn to Him with our concerns, our worries, our fears, and He will send you that beautiful spirit of peace to you. But you've got to get to know Him, because His Son, Jesus, is coming soon. The signs abound that He is coming, and the signs are all around us. Things are speeding up at an incredible rate. In fact, I look at this stuff all the time, as you know, and I cannot believe how quickly the wheels of prophecy are rolling at the moment, and we're seeing all these things coming. Jesus said, in the world you'll have tribulation, but be at peace, I've overcome the world. And so for me and my whānau, we've decided that we will follow the Lord and we'll serve Him, and so that's where we get our peace. And I want to invite you to join me for my Bible studies. They happen at least twice a week, sometimes three or four times, depending on how busy I am. And please, while there is time, seek the Lord while He can be found. All right, family, do take care. Be kind to those. Pray for those that despitefully use you and hurt you. Because as Jesus said, if you expect to be forgiven by your Father in heaven, be prepared to forgive your brothers and sisters that hurt you. And we need to keep that. As we deal with these issues, these people that are clearly got a screw loose and something going wrong upstairs and in their hearts as well, let's remember the Lord died for them as well. Good night, everybody. Thanks so much for your time tonight. See you tomorrow night, God willing. Pō marae, everybody, and good night.